Today is Thursday, March 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
Well, you have to first remember that South Korea is a country of about 50 million people, half of which live in the Seoul metropolitan area.
That's VOA Steve Miller in Seoul. We'll have full details coming up. Also ahead, the Venezuelan government orders the expulsion of Germany's ambassador. And a U.S. judge is to sentence the man who was U.S. President Donald Trump's campaign manager for several months in 2016, Paul Manafort. It's all on today's International Edition. The Venezuelan government has ordered the expulsion of Germany's ambassador because of his support of opposition leader Juan Guaido, who is engaged in a political battle with President Nicolas Maduro. The government said Ambassador Daniel Kreiner had 48 hours to leave for what it said was Kreiner's meddling in Venezuela's internal affairs. The order came after Kreiner met with Guaido at Caracas Airport Monday upon Guaido's return to the country. Guaido denounced Maduro's decision during a speech in the National Assembly yesterday. Venezuela is the most in the midst of a humanitarian crisis that is expected to worsen as U.S. oil sanctions against the country take their toll. The Trump administration has warned it may take additional measures against Maduro's socialist government. Well, a U.S. judge is to sentence the man who was U.S. President Donald Trump's campaign manager for several months in 2016, Paul Manafort. Manafort was convicted of financial crimes by a jury in Virginia last August. U.S. government lawyers said Manafort hid millions of dollars that he was paid for work on behalf of former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. After the pro-Russian leader was forced from office in 2014, prosecutors also said Manafort lied to banks to receive loans so he could continue his luxurious lifestyle. In addition to today's sentencing, Manafort faces sentencing in another case in Washington, D.C., in which he admitted guilt to conspiracy charges. He faces at least 10 years in prison in that case and is expected to receive his sentence on March 13th. Special Counsel Robert Mueller brought charges against Manafort as part of his investigation into possible links between the Trump presidential campaign and Russia. Manafort is the only one of 34 individuals and three companies charged by Mueller to U.S. face a trial. South Korea is shown to have the worst air quality among a group of 35 wealthy nations that were recently tested by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Much of South Korea has been smothered by record levels of fine dust, prompting the government to issue 6 straight days of emergency alerts and causing people to wear masks while outside to protect themselves from the punishing air pollution. I spoke with VOA's Steve Miller in Seoul about the risk the poor air quality present for sensitive groups such as the elderly, children, and anyone with respiratory illnesses.
Well, you have to first remember that South Korea is a country of about 50 million people, half of which live in the Seoul metropolitan area. So it's very densely populated. So as people tend to use their own cars, you get pollutants in the air. And that's only part of the story. So for years and years and years, there's been this phenomenon called the yellow dust here in South Korea. And what that is typically during the winter months, strong winds cascade over the Gobi Desert in China, pick up the sand, and blow it through the air. It cascades over China, down through the Korean Peninsula, and sometimes even into Japan. And for years and years and years, that was the end of it. But as more people drive, as we get more coal factories, there have been more and more pollutants into the air. And as climate change continues on the Earth, the season has actually grown in length as well. So while it was only used to be a few months we'd have this bad air season in South Korea, now it's extended to sometimes more than half a year. So right now we just finished 6 straight days of alerts from the government where the air quality was deemed unhealthy, and the PM2.5, that's the very small particles that can cause cancer, they were very prevalent, so much so you could actually see the difference in the sky when these waves came through.
How do people cope with this type of poor air quality on a daily basis?
A lot of people wear masks to kind of filter out some of the air, but to really try and get some of the benefit to really protect yourself, you have to use really strong masks that are sealed around your face. The government sends out alerts when the air quality is really, really bad. In fact, there was one day I was walking down the street just after work to let us know that the following day there was going to be a bad air quality day. And the emergency alert system on everyone's mobile phone went off all at once. And everyone stopped, reached into their purse, reached into their pocket, reached into their bag, almost simultaneously to look at the alert. That's how people mainly cope. They try to stay indoors. I was coming back from a reporting trip, and I was inside a taxi cab. And even though the windows were sealed, even though the car was on recirculation of the air, the taxi cab driver also had a mask on inside the cab.
What type of action is the government taking to actually reduce this poor air quality?
So what the Moon administration is doing, they're actually making one of their key programs this year. And so what they're trying to do is they're reaching out to China to try and develop what's called an early warning system. So if there are big gusts of wind coming along, that there's a way to alert people sooner than that. The government's also instituting a program to try and seed clouds to make some artificial rain. They did that a while back, and the first tests weren't exactly successful, but they hope to have it in place sometime in the next year or so. And the last thing they're doing is on bad air days, what they're trying to do is get people to stay off the roads if they have older, higher polluting vehicles. And those are the three main things they're trying to do to help address the problem.
That was VOA's Steve Miller in Seoul. Among the top stories in the world, at least five people were killed and nine others injured today in a car bomb blast outside a restaurant in Mogadishu near Somalia's presidential palace. Authorities in Pakistan say that a nationwide counter-extremism effort has brought under government control 216 religious seminaries and educational institutions run by outlawed Islamist groups. And a court in France convicts a top Catholic official today of failing to report allegations of sexual abuse against a priest. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's recently retired planet-hunting Kepler Space Telescope has discovered thousands of planets since its launch in 2009. The first exoplanet candidate to be discovered by the space telescope is called Kepler-1658b. At first, the massive hot Jupiter planet was categorized as an exoplanet candidate, then was listed as a false positive when scientists didn't think the data indicated an actual planet. The scientists changed their minds later when it was again reclassified as an exoplanet candidate. An international team of astronomers led by University of Hawaii graduate student Ashley Chontos reported that Kepler-1658b has finally been confirmed as an actual planet. The team's research was recently presented at the Kepler K2 Science Conference in Glendale, California. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. The Chinese telecommunications company Huawei has filed a lawsuit against the United States government. The suit argues that a bill the U.S. Congress passed last year to restrict the company's business is unconstitutional. The lawsuit in a U.S. court is the latest effort by the company to answer accusations that it is a security threat. Huawei denies this. Well, the spark that lit the fire of South Africa's increasingly popular far-left party started in 2012 on a windswept hill near the Lonmin Platinum Mine in Marikana. Police that August day shot dead 34 striking miners. The party, born soon afterward the Economic Freedom Fighters, is the first third party to seriously challenge South Africa's political order since the end of apartheid. VOA's Anita Powell visited the community where it all began and asked residents what they see in South Africa's political future.
The dusty mining town of Marikana is perhaps best known for its darkest day, the 2012 police shooting of 34 striking mine workers. But anger over their deaths planted the seeds of the Economic Freedom Fighters, the far-left party that could bring an end to the African National Congress's grip on power. This year, as they approach their second national election, the EFF stands a chance of making real gains in ANC strongholds. Already, the party has come to dominate university politics, winning student elections late last year at the universities of Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Zululand. In adult politics, the party also won key municipalities in the 2016 vote. EFF ward councillor Wendy Pretorius represents the undeveloped area of Wonderkop, which contains the hill where miners gathered in 2012 to strike against conditions at the Lonmin Platinum Mine. Pretorius said she was an ANC supporter until police fired on the strikers, and President Jacob Zuma declined to meet with their widows.
So we were singing, waiting for the president of the country, Jacob Zuma. And Jacob Zuma, he never pitched. We were singing and waiting. And then instead of coming to the mountain to see the people and to hear the side of the story, what's happening, he just went to the hospital, to the management of Lonmin. After that, he go back. So it's where we started to say, you know what? It seems like we are not belong here at South Africa.
Critics of the EFF have denounced its leaders' fiery, sometimes race-baiting rhetoric, its far-left policies, and its habit in its early days of getting into violent scuffles in Parliament. But in the past year, the party has encroached on the ANC's traditional base, South Africa's poor black majority. Marikana resident Nomkhulisi Mafalwana says EFF representatives have brought positive change. Pretorius, she said, helped set up a community project in which mine workers' widows sell chickens to improve their meager income.
EFF has made a good change. He's trying us. Because this place is not a place that you can see that there is a people who live here. It's a place that who lives pigs, not people.
The movement is also gaining supporters in urban areas, where adherents have marched for free university education and assistance for upwardly mobile young South Africans. Here at the University of Johannesburg, which has nearly 50,000 students, the EFF took over the student council for the first time this year. Chairperson David Rapunga says the EFF strives to redress South Africa's historic inequalities, beginning by taking back land that was seized centuries ago by European settlers.
When you have land, you are able to nationalize. Nationalize your banks, can nationalize your mines. All the resources and the profit that are going to come back to the people, that are going to benefit the people of South Africa, Africa, and other parts of the world at large.
Rapunga says at the end of the day, EFF supporters want what was promised to all South Africans when the apartheid regime fell in 1994, a stake in their nation's potential. Anita Powell, VOA News, Marikana, South Africa.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
The International Labor Organization reports the work and pay gender gap remains wide, and only implementing strong policies and laws will change this situation for the better. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from ILO headquarters in Geneva, where the agency has launched a new report, A Quantum Leap for Gender Equality, for a better future of work for all in advance of International Women's Day, which is tomorrow.
When it comes to getting a job, women lag far behind men. The International Labor Organization finds the needle on this has hardly moved over the past 27 years. It says 26% fewer women than men are likely to be employed. It says this also extends to women in top jobs. ILO data show globally that just 1/4 of managers or leaders are women. It says women who make it to the top tend to be 1 year younger and better educated than their male counterparts. Despite these qualifications, authors of the study say women do not draw the same salary for the same top job done by men. Globally, the study finds the gender wage gap remains at an average of 20%. Shauna Olney is chief of the ILO Gender, Equality, and Diversity branch. She says mothers of young children up to age 6 have the lowest chance of being employed.
The motherhood employment penalty has increased over the past 10 years by 38%. So again, something is not going right. This is going in the wrong direction. There's also a motherhood leadership penalty, as only 25% of managers with young children are women, and women's share in managerial positions rises to 31% when they don't have children.
Olney tells VOA the work done by women in leadership roles tends to be underrated. When it comes to job performance, she says women tend to be praised for their so-called soft skills, for their ability to communicate and relate well with people.
I think the fact that we call them soft shows they're undervalued. They're not the hard skills, they're not the serious stuff, they're soft. So why should we pay for them? Why should we give them any value? So I think there's a lot of biases, and the evidence is very clear there, in terms of how we evaluate what women and men do.
The report advocates certain measures to accelerate the pace of change in achieving gender parity. It calls for strong laws and policies that prohibit discrimination in the workplace and promote equality of treatment, opportunity, and outcome. It recommends supporting women through work transitions and giving them a greater voice and representation in regard to labor matters. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Well, an environmental movement is growing in Europe and may soon spread to the U.S. Children and teenagers skipping class to raise awareness about climate change and protest government inaction. While many adults endorse their cause, their method is controversial. Should students skip school to strike for political issues? Marcus Meyer-Gellin explains.
Students skipping school to protest for climate action. This has been going on for months, mostly in Europe. Every Friday, tens of thousands of teenagers leave classrooms in Belgium, Germany, France, Australia, and other nations. Their dramatic message: why go to school if there is no future to live for? The movement started back in summer of 2018 with just one girl, then 15-year-old activist Greta Thunberg from Sweden. She refused to go to school on Fridays and instead sat in front of the Swedish parliament with a sign that read, "School strike for climate." Social media made her famous, and she soon gained a large following. Thunberg was invited to speak at the World Economic Forum in Davos.
I want you to panic. I want you to feel the fear I feel every day. And then I want you to act.
Thunberg's hashtags, School Strike for Climate and Fridays for Future, are now leading students out of classrooms to rally on the streets.
That's not democracy!
If governments don't do anything, the world will be a lot worse place because there'll be extreme storms, droughts, flooding, wars over natural resources. So there'll be a loss of stability across the world.
I skipped school today. Well, you can't even really say skipped because I think climate change is such a big deal that it should be okay to miss 2 hours of class for that.
The movement has picked up endorsements from German Chancellor Angela Merkel, British Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn, and European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker, who said the students reminded him of himself as a young activist. Others have been less supportive. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison voiced his disapproval last November.
Kids should go to school. That's what we're committed to. We don't support the idea of kids not going to school. What we want is more learning in schools and less activism in schools.
British Prime Minister Theresa May also voiced her concern that children waste valuable lesson time that would be important to help solve climate change and other problems. But Greta Thunberg tweeted back that politicians have already wasted 30 years without taking action. Some of the protesters addressed their criticism directly to May. The movement has been concentrated in Europe, but local groups are emerging elsewhere. Activists hope to spread the message in the United States on March 15th. That's when many groups have declared an International Strike Day, a move that may create even more controversy. Marcus Mayer-Gehlen for VOA News Washington.
Thank you, Marcus. Well, a Tanzanian woman is traveling around Africa showcasing her soccer ball juggling skills as a way to feed her family. Her video clips have gone viral on social media and captivated the hearts of many people on the continent and beyond. This month, one of her clips caught the eye of U.S. President Donald Trump, who tweeted, "Amazing." Lamech Messina caught up with her in the Malawi capital, Lilongwe.
Hadara Chausin Jeje started honing her ball juggling skills when she was a teenager in Tanzania, playing for a local women's football team. She maneuvers the ball with her feet, head, chest, and shoulders. For the past 6 years, Jeje, a single mother of two sons, has been using the skills to raise money to feed her family.
Yani, hii kazi.
She says this helps her paying school fees for her two children, buying food to feed her family, and also paying for household bills and other needs. She has so far traveled to several African countries, including Cameroon, Burundi, Gabon, and recently Malawi. She charges $4 for a two-minute performance and earns between $45 and $50 a day. She dismisses accusations of using black magic to develop her skills. There is no magic in this ball, she says. This is my own talent I started developing long ago. In Malawi, her skills captivated national women's football officials who thought of bringing her into their women's soccer development program, but she declined the offer. Suzy Ongwira is the chairperson of Women's Football Committee in Central Malawi.
If she was ready to impart the skills with others, I think we would explore all the other options. I would liaise with the teams and see how best we can utilize her talent to impact, especially the youngsters who are just starting.
Her skills have also dazzled male footballers. Samuel Zeka plays social football in the capital, Lilongwe.
Luso imene wazi mai.
He says this is a rare talent for a woman to juggle the ball as this lady is doing. I would be very grateful if she would teach me such skills, he added. Her video filmed in Malawi also caught the eye of the President Donald Trump. Njeje, who is 29 years old, says she wished the American president could have done more than tweeting his amazement. She says she wished he helped her feed her family. She has two children and elderly parents. They all rely on her help. She wished Trump helped boost her talent so that she can be known across the world and earn more money. But after Trump's tweet, JJ received various requests for interviews from local and international media organizations like the BBC and Reuters. She returned to Tanzania last week after an agent who came to Malawi from Zimbabwe convinced her of a possible lucrative advertising contract in Spain. JJ told VOA she hopes the new contract marks the beginning of her better life. Lamech Messina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
And you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Rob McLean. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.